Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren, of course. So today we'll bring in our guest right away. She's an author, and the new book coming out is Suspension, and it's Andrea Faye Christians. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you. It's great to be talking to you.
So you've got quite the history here, I tell you, radio and all over the place, you know. But you actually moved to Malta with the function, the idea that you were going to write. How did that come about?
It's a bit of a long story. I was working as a radio presenter in the United Kingdom. And actually, my initial introduction to Malta was to come and work in radio. And I did that for a couple of years. I had a really good time. And then I actually returned to British radio later in the day. But while I was working in Malta, I got the opportunity to sort of become a freelance writer as well. And that sort of really stirred something which had always existed within me. I've been writing since I was a child. And I just wanted to follow that dream. And as time wore on, even though I had a successful 20-year career in radio, I realized in my heart that I'm really a writer. And that's what I've always wanted to do. And so in a way, Malta enabled me to realize that dream.
Yeah, it's quite a change in discipline, in a sense, like to sit down and to write a novel. It's different than, let's say, doing some freelance writing and stuff. Was there something that kind of initiated that bug, so to speak, to sit down and do it?
Well, to be honest, I've been writing for as long as I can remember. My mother got called down to the school when I was 5 years old. And her attitude was like, oh, gosh, what again? Now, what's she up to? And the teacher just took her to one side. I was 5 years old and said, look at this. And it was page after page after page and picture after picture of a story. And they were saying, your daughter's going to be a writer. And as I grew up, I had the box under the bed of unwritten stories, which my mother told me last week she still has. And that box, as years went by, became a computer file of lots of unwritten stories, unfinished stories and half-written, you know, the ideas. But features writing was great. It was a great learning curve. You have to obviously structure the article. You have to have the beginning, the middle, and the end. You have to start with, you know, an introduction and come to a conclusion. Writing a novel is an entirely different discipline, and it requires a certain stamina, which I feel that a lot of people want to write books, and a lot of people fall by the wayside because of that stamina. It's the number of times, Alan, that my finger hovered over the delete button when I was writing suspension, because I just thought it was rubbish, full of self-doubt. You know, you have to battle with all these things, writer's block, losing your way through the story. But I managed it with suspension. And I think the difference was, for me, was that when I envisaged this story, I really did see it beginning, middle, and end. I saw it in its entirety.
Wow. So do you outline quite a bit before you actually write, or were you just kind of had the idea of how you were going to end it or where it was going, and you sort of filled in the details? Like, what was your process?
I am probably the most disorganized person in the world. Okay. And definitely. I just, there's a very interesting story behind suspension, because the name itself is a play on words. It's based on the Clifton Suspension Bridge, which is in Bristol in the United Kingdom. Okay. And this is a massive piece of civil engineering, which was built in the 18th century, which in its time was groundbreaking. And even now, today, when I would fly into Bristol Airport, which would be my nearest airport, I would gaze up at this structure. And I would just think to myself that this is an amazing piece of architecture, you know, an engineering feat, you know, of great proportions. And also, when I then researched the guy who built it, a guy called Isambard Brunel, who turns out to be a complete genius, and also a bit of a rock star in his time, he was very charismatic. I just thought, there's a story here waiting to be written. But so I saw, you know, this character who'd built the bridge itself, and I just thought, there's got to be, you know, a story. And the name Suspension is symbolic, not only of the bridge being a suspension bridge, but of the protagonist, who is basically suspended in time. She's suspended between two worlds. So I saw the story pretty much in its entirety, and then I just fleshed it out as I came to rewrite it, in essence, basically.
Yeah. Oh, so your main character in this, how do you experience your characters? Are you seeing them in your mind in a vision, or do you just hear them, or is none of that? What's your experience?
Well, I think that a lot of writers, you know, by virtue of what we do, who we are, we tend to observe things. We're a bit like sponges, you know. If anybody wrongs you in life, you don't have to wait for karma. You just get them into your books, you know. And I've used various experiences, people I've met. There's a lot of me in Carla Thompson, the main protagonist. There's also my daughter, there's friends. And so she's a composite character. And she's a 31-year-old divorced English teacher who's a bit disillusioned in life. You could even say she's borderline depressed, and she's sort of lost her way. And she's a reluctant heroine. She doesn't want this role that's thrust upon her. And around her, by virtue of the story as it evolves, she attracts people who are in transit. They're caught between life and death, but they have unfinished business. And her job, reluctant as she is to take it on, and that she's predestined to take on, as she finds out as the story progresses, is to help these people finish their stories. And Isambard Brunel, who is actually, he was a real life character, and as I said, a very charismatic man, he is the gatekeeper and of the bridge, which is also a portal, a time travel portal. And he's guardian of his secrets. And as she evolves into her role, reluctantly, she finds her purpose in life and helps people. So my characters, the protagonist has an internal struggle. She's a woman that's disillusioned. She's 31, as I said. She's disillusioned with life, disappointed with life. And then she finds her purpose, and also she finds true love. And then she's faced with an impossible decision at the end of the book. So those, and then there are other characters. I've got fictional characters. There's the taxi driver, Billy Lamps. Now, Billy Lamps, his real name is William Lumsden, and he is totally fictional, and yet he feels so real to me, Alan, that I've taken him into another book that I'm working on, and I've created a whole life history for him, and he's an ex-Marine, but he's totally fictional. So my mind works in different ways, and I think a lot of people who write may identify with that. So we observe, we take facets of people, and that's how I work anyway.
Wow. Where did the science fiction come from for you? Because being, you know, the time travel and the portal and stuff, do you have like a fascination with this?
That's a really good question, because I've never really read this sort of genre, to be honest. And I've written the stuff I've written before. I wrote a memoir. I started writing like a detective series about a serial killer. And this was completely different to anything that I'd ever written before. But I need to tell you something which is important, because when I envisaged this story, I didn't mean to write it as a book. It was meant to be a script. Okay. And the reason it's a book is because I don't know how to write a script. But even the sequel that I'm working, it's very cinematic, and it was either lending itself to being a film or a television miniseries. It was always the intention that it would go on to the small screen or the big screen. And then, because I had no experience in that sort of in that line, I actually created the story, and it sort of gained its own momentum. So it's a completely new genre for me, I have to be honest.
Wow. What do you think gives you the ability to make it sound real? And I mean that in the character sense, when you've got your main character being depressed and all the things that you were saying about her, how is it you draw those emotions out?
Well, as I said to you, some of it is me. I mean, when the book starts, she's living in a bit of a broken down flat. And I remember there was a point in my life where I was living in a broken down flat, and the landlord in the book, the lovely Frank, whose real name was Joe, sadly he's no longer with us, was my landlord. And so I remember lying on the sofa and like thinking something could happen to me and nobody would know. It was a point in my life where I was a little bit lost and down. So I took that and I started writing Suspension. And a friend of mine had told me that she'd gone in for routine surgery and she'd had an out-of-body experience. So I took that story of the fact that I had fallen asleep, this Carla had fallen asleep, who was based on me in the very beginning, and that she thinks that she's having an out-of-body experience, that she's dreaming, but in fact, what, she's actually died. So that was part of my own experience. And then just as the story progresses, this is an important part as well, that there's historical fact tied into the story. I've intertwined that. For example, the first person that Carla meets on the suspension bridge, which is a place that she's drawn to, is a girl called Sabrina. And Sabrina's died tragically. And Sabrina doesn't even realize that she's actually died. Now, this is a true story. This is her name wasn't Sabrina. And this incident did not happen in Bristol. It happened in Malta about 8 years ago. A young girl, 26 years of age, had done her motorcycle test. And literally within a day of passing her motorcycle test, she was killed. And I remember reading this news story and being so struck by a life that was snuffed out in an instant. And that story, that thing that I read, stayed with me. So she became Sabrina in the story. So again, I've taken something real there. Matilda, who's another character, she's so charismatic and so colourful, this woman. Matilda is a Jamaican-born psychic. She plays an important part in the story. And Jamaican, loud, colourful, okay. In real life, Matilda is a top-rated international lawyer. She's a friend of mine, and she was born in Brixton, London. But I took her laugh, I took her tenacity, and I took that character into Matilda. And so, like I said, I've got, you know, there are people, there's my imagination. It's a whole mix of things that I use to make my characters. Also friends that tell me stories, experiences, and that's how it works for me.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you mix fiction with nonfiction, like, you know, you've got the realism and real characters, and then you've got fictional ones. And how do you decide where you're going to draw the line on what you're going to use about the real characters?
That's another really good question. The thing is that Brunel himself was such a fascinating character, and there was so much potential material there to use with him. And the thing is, he built, apart from this monumental bridge, he built Paddington Station, but the most perhaps iconic structure that he built was the Thames Tunnel. It's a tunnel that passed under the River Thames in London, which effectively joined both sides of London. It was the first underground shopping mall, if you like. And it was of huge importance at the time. And that it was built by Irish labourers who were working in terrible conditions. I mean, literally, they were dying from cholera and all sorts of terrible diseases. And they were paid, you know, handsomely for the risks they were taking. And basically what happened is that during the construction of this tunnel in, I think it was 1817, correct me if I'm wrong on that, okay, there was a flood and Brunel was swept away. And many of these men were swept to their deaths, okay? And I took that event and he was literally plucked from the murky, filthy waters of this flooded tunnel by his right-hand man who saved his life. He was 28 years of age. So he cheated death. Now, I took that into the story. It's quite a dramatic part of the story. And I took Carla, because she's traveled back in time. And it's a point in the story where she realizes that her and Brunel, whether she likes it or not, they are linked because she saved him. It was actually her predecessor who saved him because she has people like her. They all have, they have a physical characteristic as well, which is red hair, which runs in my family, and heterochromia. Now, heterochromia is the different colour eyes. You know, you have the brown and the blue, or you have the green and the brown. And this character has a brown and a blue eye. And this was my grandmother. My grandmother was like that. And it was very striking. So I made that physical characteristic a sign of what Carla really is, which is a dreamwalker. That's her destined role. This woman, this person, it's always the firstborn in a female generation on in her line, and it happens every 100 years or so, of women that have this physical characteristic of the red hair, of the brown and the blue eye.
So do you have your own paranormal experiences or stuff that you've felt, that you've kind of used those feelings in the book?
Definitely, yeah, I have, very much so. I have had experiences and for example, all right, there's at the end of the scene where, at the end of the book, where her love interest, they basically, I don't want to give too much away, but basically, because he has been in a terrible accident and he's in a really bad way, he commits suicide, okay? Which obviously is a bit of a sensitive subject. But when he's in the water and basically she's holding him, and she said, it was very emotional for me to write that. She felt that she was wrapped in the arms of an angel. Now that experience happened to me the night my father died. He died unexpectedly and I had no idea that it had happened. But that night he held me in his arms and I felt that experience. And I woke up that morning and I my phone had switched itself off and I put my phone on and there were 6 missed calls from my brother. And my brother rang and said, listen, Andrea, she said, you know, that dad died last night. And I said, I knew, because he visited me. And he also visited me the night before his funeral. And I have had lots of experiences, yeah. And so I suppose, I don't know. I mean, I do believe, I don't know if it's God, but I do believe there's an afterlife. And I'm not scared of dying. I'm scared of not living, if you get me. And so I've used that in the story. It raises a lot of questions, you know?
Yeah. What do you hope people take away from the book? So after they read it, and of course the entertainment of the story and drama and stuff, what do you hope they take away?
Well, you know, when I started writing it, I planned to write it quickly. And then, as usual, life got between me and the keyboard. So I didn't finish it. I shelved it after 4 or 5 months. And I went back to it about 4 months, four years later. And I had to reread it because I'd forgotten about it. And then I finished it quickly, you know, within a 6-month time period. And I just remember thinking it was fun. But somebody described it as like an onion. It's got lots of levels. So you can take from it what you want. You can pick it up off the shelf and think this is a really light read and it's fun and it's very dynamic. But you can also then look at it and say, well, hang on a second, there are depths here. You can take from it what you want to find, really. It offers different levels of what you're looking for, I suppose. I hadn't really consciously done that, But another reviewer pointed that out to me, of the different levels of the book, and even my publisher Echo of Lucid House Publishing, she pointed out that it questions a lot of things. It makes you think a little bit outside the box, if you like.
Hmm. Now, you said that you're working on another book in it, and so this is a series. Mm. Did you kind of have that in mind to begin with?
No, no. To be honest, no. I was just so happy to finish Suspension. I didn't even think, to be honest, to publish it. I just wanted to finish it. And I was so happy. And when I finished it, I felt quite bereft. I missed the characters, that I'd become so involved in the story that I was sad to leave them go. And then I'd met Echo through just a chance meeting, because Echo is based in Atlanta. And obviously I was in Sicily at the time. And we met, and she liked, I sent her the first few chapters and she liked it. So I finished the story quite quickly. And then she said to me, Andrea, we need a sequel. And I sort of was thinking about it. And then I took my time and I did the rewrite on the book, which took me about a month, because I was working like lots of different jobs at the time as well. I was under quite a lot of pressure. And then I saw the sequel, and the sequel is outrageous. I've got to say, it's exciting. Now, I have to say that the Time Binder series, I need to explain what this is. When I was looking for a name for the name of the series, there's, you know, to find something original that hasn't been used before. And I found the phrase Time Binder. And I was startled that nobody has used this before. If I asked you, Alan, would you know what a Time Binder is?
Yeah, no.
No, okay. Well, we are all time binders, okay? And this is the reason why animals still live in caves, and as humans, we've moved on. Time binding. Okay, let's think of the Egyptians. So what did they give us? They gave us astrology. They gave us medicine. They gave us hieroglyphics, writing. We think of the Romans. They gave us roads. They gave us drainage. They gave us all sorts of things. You know what? You get my gist on this? That's time binding. So what we do is, as the human race, we learn from previous generations. That's time binding, okay? Mm. So I've taken that concept, and in the Time Binder series, in the second book particularly, somebody is altering time, and I've spun that idea of time binding.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
But having a really bad guy. He again is based on a historical character. His name is Friar Conrad of Marlburg. He was a 13th century priest, and he was the first papal inquisitor. And he burned hundreds of women at the stake, okay, for witchcraft. And so I took this guy, and this man has found the secret of time travel through whatever he's been doing, and he's spinning this idea for his own benefit and time binding. Now, by altering time, if you imagine dropping a little pebble into the middle of a lake, and instead of getting a ripple, you're getting a tsunami, okay? And so basically, that's the concept of the time binder. And the second book concentrates on this really bad guy that needs to be sorted out.
Wow.
But the Time Binder series is clever, you know. I will just to tease it, right? Because I'm literally halfway through it. The character, she doesn't know. Carla doesn't know where she's going, but she ends up in. Initially, she's in 16th, 17th century England, and she thinks that she's found the source of the problem, and then she finds out coming back, where the portal throws her out, she's in medieval Germany. And then, because of something that happens in the story, she ends up going into the future. And then she's dealing with a whole different situation there. Now, whether that's going to be, I had thought that would be the third book, but the way the book is coming together, if I want to keep the fast pace and the compact style of it, I think that future story will definitely be in the second book, and it might tease into the third. I haven't really planned that far ahead yet. There's definitely going to be the second book, which is scheduled for release in January next year, if I manage to finish it. So I'm against the clock right now.
Yeah. Well, it happens a lot. Yeah. So who are your favorite writers, or do you have anybody that you like to reference or go to to read?
I haven't read a lot of this genre. I mean, I've just the most recent book I read is Anne Lamott's Bird by Bird, which is the Bible for writers, you know, and it's such an inspirational book. It's not only a book about the writer's life, it's a book about life in general. And I have sacred books, you know, that these are part of my sort of personal connection. When it came to inspiration for Suspension, I loved, there was a film back in about 2000, it was called Truly Madly Deeply. It was written, the script was done by Anthony Minghella. Beautiful story. And then another book that perhaps influenced me was Alice Sebold's Lovely Bones. You know, my story is not like that. It's very different. Somebody has compared it to a book called Kindred. I can't remember the name of the writer. But, you know, when I was writing it, I deliberately didn't read this genre because I was worried that I'd end up writing something similar to somebody else. And even after I wrote Suspension, I was thinking maybe there's something similar out there. And there are elements of my story in other people's stories. But I steered away from that genre. The last book I think I read that I enjoyed was The Tattooist of Auschwitz, you know, completely different. So I tend to read across a genre. And I just like well-written books. I love Ernest Hemingway, his way of writing, not his content, but his style of writing. So minimalist. I like that style of writing. I hold him in great esteem, which is why he's actually in the book as well. He's got a little cameo appearance.
And, oh, there you go. Yeah.
In fact, he plays quite an important part in the second story as well, because he was quite, you know, a man's man and quite sort of sexist. And they have a really interesting little banter going on between them. But in the end, they sort of learn to respect each other. And he has an important role in the second book as well. So, wow. Hemingway's in there.
Well,
sort of throw him in, you know, for a bit of interest, you know.
Yeah. Well, and so what do you do when you write? Are you the type of person that sits down and kind of goes, well, there's nobody home between 10 and 2, and so I can just sit down and write, and you do that, you can turn it on, or do you have to be in a certain mood?
I'm trying to discipline myself. I work working as a features writer. I used to work from about 9 till 1. It never really worked out like that because my brain would be fried, you know, by the time you've done 4 hours, really, you know, sitting there and working. I try to work mornings. I find that's the best time for me. But then if I do have a little sleep in the afternoon, I compare it to like having a battery. Your brain is like a battery that runs down. And if I've done 4 hours of writing, particularly if it's that first, you know, the creative writing where you're really throwing down that rough piece of clay and you're trying to model it into something, that can be very tiring. So if I'm tired or if I'm doing a bit of a warm up, I usually will spend like 20 minutes, half an hour correcting and reworking something maybe that I've written the day before. And I find that very relaxing and very, very enjoyable. But then if I need to write something new, and I call it that piece of pottery, that clay, the pottery, you throw it down on the wheel, you've got to rework it. I've got to be in a particular sort of energy mode to write like that. And that's exciting. Now, but I do spend a lot of time, often I can be sitting, lying awake in the middle of the night, and I'm actually thinking of the story. And then I'll write it, and then I'll go back and I'll rework it. And then sometimes I get completely blocked. For example, in Suspension, she attends her own funeral. And I must have rewritten that scene about 5 times because I wasn't happy with it. And it was funny because the publicist came back to me, the publisher, and she said to me, Echo, lovely Echo, said, I love the funeral scene. I thought, I sweated blood over that scene, you know what I mean? Because it was just I was not happy with it, and I needed to work it and work it and work it. And it came, it's like everything, the more you work on it, it comes good in the end. It's just the fact that sometimes you can overwork something as well. And then sometimes when I get writer's block, I'll just think, well, I can't work this bit of the story out. So I'm just going to jump ahead and I'm going to write something else. And I try to keep myself going. And then suddenly from somewhere, the muse rocks up. She's gone shopping or she's been out singing karaoke. She says, OK, today I'm going to give you the inspiration. And she gives me the words that I need to make that story sort of gel together. I don't usually get writer's block for too long, but I do get it. And it can be very frustrating. And I've learned then not to beat myself up over it, just to sort of go out, do something else or write something else. I'm actually working on another book as well, which is completely different. Mm. And that's called Chemo Club. I don't know if you know about this. It's called Chemo Club. Now, chemo stands for chemotherapy. And I really want to talk about this because it's very important to me. And it's a book about cancer. Mm-hmm. And I actually got diagnosed with breast cancer in 2019. And I battled it and I've come through and I'm fine. But it's a story about the people I met on my journey to recovery, the doctors, the nurses, the patients, and I met the most amazing people. And it's not a memoir. It's a story about various characters. And Billy Lamps is in that story as well. He's the taxi driver. So that's a completely different genre of writing. And it was very cathartic to write it as well.
Must have
so
been.
Yeah. That's,
yeah. That's, well, it would be very personal, right? A lot more so, I would imagine.
Yes.
And life experience, right? Does that make you feel a little bit vulnerable when you expose a lot of your own person in a book like that? Let's say the chemo, especially in today's day, you know, because right now, just about anybody and their dog can find you on social media and the review systems, and they can say things. And do you ever think about that? Or?
Well, to be honest, I've never really gone public about my illness until the thing came out about the book, you know, and talking about Chemo Club. And Chemo Club will have its day because it's an important message. There's a sisterhood there of breast cancer, you know, that it's an important message. 1 in 8 women will have this illness. And I found tremendous support and strength given from the people around me that really rallied and helped, and also got very let down by people that you wouldn't expect, you know. And even my own consultant said there's a need for this book. And I will write it, but it will be a different readership. It's, I'm not even sure if I'm going to publish it under my name, to be honest, because it's a different style of writing. Like I said to you, I it can be a bit risky sometimes, I think, as a writer, to write something entirely different and say it's Andrea Faye Christians, because it will be a different type of book. Time Binder follows in the style of Suspension, and it's the you know, a roller coaster, rollicking ride. Chemo Club. It's nuances, it's emotions, it's a subtlety, you know, it's a different type of writing.
Right.
And I enjoy them both.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. What would be your other name?
I don't know. That's the problem. AF Christians, maybe, yeah. You know? I don't know.
Yeah.
I've got to talk to my publisher about that. You know,
we'll have Andrea Hemingway. Like. How's that?
Oh, yeah, I wish. In my dreams.
Yeah, you could do that. Well, when things are kind of stressful and stuff, like all of the last couple of years, you know, all the tension and turmoil and, you know, the pandemic and all sorts of stuff, does that sort of... Does that stress sort of interfere with your writing?
No, not at all. Because I was literally recovering from, you know, quite major surgery at the time.
Right.
And I was up in my farm in Sicily, looking out over the most beautiful valley with all these wonderful horses and dogs and cats around me. And I was just, you know, writing, finishing off Suspension and recovering. So I didn't really feel that I was missing out on anything because I was just getting better. I didn't really feel the pandemic. I was lucky. It was one of the few compensations of having this illness, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty amazing. You look back and you've completed this Suspension now and it's coming out, how do you feel? Like you've made it, do you think it's changed you in some ways?
I think it's unlocked a door, Alan. I think this is so important. I mean, I'm sure that many of your listeners are aspiring writers. And if I'm annoyed about anything, is that it took me so long to finish a story and to believe in myself. Like I told you, the number of times my finger hovered over the delete button. And I've published over 400 magazine articles on everything you can imagine, human interest stories, motoring, interior design, you name it, I write it. But when it came to writing a novel, It like I said, it required a different stamina, and self-doubt was such, you know, a debilitating feeling. So I believe that, you know, anybody that wants to write, you just got to stick at it out there, you know, and believe in yourself. And I sent it out to people that I really trusted to read the chapters, and they were saying, no, keep on. And there were some close friends who really encouraged me in those dark times where I just thought, oh, that's rubbish, I'm going to delete it, you know. in answer to that question,
but that self-doubt, you know, do you think it ever goes away? Do you ever think it goes away? Because you might have, you know, you overcome it, you do the book. I mean, I've done a few books myself, but I constantly go through it. I don't see it, it's not something that really goes away for me.
I think, yeah. I mean, to be honest, when I reread Suspension, because I left it, I didn't want to see it for a few weeks. I sort of read Suspension from start to finish. And again, after some months, and I couldn't believe I'd written it. But a part of me did think, oh, people are going to think it's rubbish. I mean, my couple of friends have just been kind. And I suppose it was really when I started getting reviews from people. I've recently had a great review, an Amazon.com review from an independent reviewer, and that's really given me so much belief in myself. But I have to say that, like I said to you, when I wrote this book, my initial sort of intention was just to finish it. I never really even thought about publishing it. That came later. But now that I've actually, you know, this is, the book seems to be, you know, being well received by the initial reviews it's getting in the industry, it does give you confidence. And I feel that it has unlocked a door. And my advice to anybody is just stick at it. Don't ever, you know, and even if you get a bad day, you just keep at it, because you work, you're learning your art, you're honing your skills. And I'd like to think that, you know, now I'm sort of benefiting from that, you know, after all these years. Except I think it was a good training ground, writing as a features writer. It was a very small, obviously medium compared to a book. But you know what you do is you just split a book up into sections at the end of the day. It's all chapters, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, right. Of course. Now the social media. Do you like to take part in social media, or do you have a website? Where do people find Andrea?
Okay. Well, I am a bit of a klutz when it comes to social media, but I've got AndreaFayChristians.com. Which is my website, which is being quite regularly updated by the lovely Alex. And that is pretty much, and I have Facebook. I haven't got an author page yet, but I need to do that. I'm still on my private page. I'm going to make it public, I mean, for now. And I'm, as of, at the moment, those are my main outlets on social media. I have to get myself sorted out with like a Twitter account and Instagram. I'm just a bit slow on the uptake on these things.
Yeah, get on TikTok, you know, start doing it.
Yeah, I haven't got a clue, but I'll have to find somebody to help me.
You just get on and do it, you know.
I know, I'm just so lazy though, Alan. You know, when you're learning, I love writing, but when it comes to computers, I'm just like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, well, you'll like what you like. I mean, of course, we're going to have everything up on our site. We'll have your website up so people can find it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Okay. So what next? What are you working on now? You're doing book two then, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm literally about 35,000 words through Time Binder. It's proving to be quite challenging. It's exciting, but there's a lot of historical fact in there that I need to check. You know, to make sure, because you can guarantee that somebody's going to pick you up on it.
Great.
So I'm working on that, and I'm really hoping to get that ready by September and get that off to Echo, because she needs 4 months to get it out. We've delayed the book because I didn't get my act together. So I'm hoping to have it out to get it to her by September, so it'll be out for release at the end of January next year. And then I want to finish Chemo Club. I'm champing at the bits to finish that because I feel it's an important book. And then I'm milling around a few other ideas, you know, but I've got enough. I think I need to just concentrate on those two things for now.
Yeah, of course. The research, how much time does that take you to do that research for that, like with the facts and that stuff like that?
Well, you know, Wikipedia is great. Oh. So thank goodness for the internet.
Yeah, it makes life easier, I guess, you know, internet.
Yeah, I mean, I was writing something the other day about, the character, you know, it's medieval Germany. What did the women wear? So I just had to Google, you know, it took me 2 minutes to Google what type of clothing they would wear. They wouldn't be wearing the corseted dressings. They would wear quite the loose, like Greek style tunics, but you've got to make sure you got it right. And so, and even the shoes and things, you know, because you can guarantee somebody somewhere will pick up on it, you know?
Yeah.
And so these are the sort of things that take time. This friar, Conrad of Marburg, I don't know where this book came, but I found this book called Whores of the Devil. And it's a book, it's a historical book. It is awful, but of all the stuff that happened from Joan of Arc, who was the first martyr, right through to the Nazis, you know, in the World War II.
Yeah.
And there's just so much material in this book. And I found on page 16, Friar Conrad of Marburg. And I thought, he is rock and roll. He's the perfect baddie. And so I've just taken him. But there's not very much that you can know about him. So I've had to do a lot of research on him. He's great. He's so evil.
Well, yeah, you know, do you ever put do you ever look for evil characters, their personalities? Do you take people you know or you've run across or you've met and use them as kind of
I have to be very careful.
That a lot from fictional writers or historical fiction people will do that. They'll say sometimes it's just simple, sometimes it's someone that butted in on a lineup for them or something. Like there's something silly, right? But they meet someone and they're not very nice.
I've got to tell you, like, Friar Conrad is based on an ex-boyfriend of mine.
Oh, well, see.
Okay. I'm going to get sued, right? So.
No, not necessarily. I mean, because it can be someone that inspired. They inspired your character, right?
Yeah,
it's not like you take every word and thought that they have and you made them. It's like they inspired it.
No, I took aspects of him, you know.
Yeah.
And I obviously made him much worse. And then, for example, even in in Chemo Club, there's a character, the mother-in-law of one of the characters, and that was the mother of a friend's mother-in-law who gave this friend of mine the most terrible time. And I've taken her into the story. So as I said, we take things, you know, and we use them. And that's why we observe. And I love to sometimes just sit and watch the world go by. And, you know, just observe people. It could be even perhaps the way that this woman was smoking a cigarette the other day, and she was quite a beautiful woman, but she was just smoking the, and she was blowing the smoke up into the air very elegantly. And I thought, I'm going to take that. I'm going to use that mannerism in one of my characters. My mind works in mysterious ways. Yeah, my mind works in very mysterious ways.
Fantastic. Well, it's been an interesting conversation, and everyone, you know, if you're out in Malta, do not, if you see Andrea, she's probably going to be writing about you. So don't let that happen. Run for the hills. You see her, you're in a coffee shop, get your coffee to go and get out. Okay? Because you'll end up being some character in the next book. Okay? I'm just telling you.
There's some good people in there too, you know.
Well, that's what, you know, you're rolling the dice. I tell you, I take the coffee and run, but that's me. You know, freedom.
Oh,
anyway, well, the book we're talking about, of course, is called Suspension, and it's the new book coming out. And our guest is the author, Andrea Faye Christians. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Alan. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino movie reviews.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.